he actually separated or dislocated his collarbone on stage 4 or 5. So he rode the entire event after that strapped up, and he still finished really well. I don't like the term sponsorship because it implies just giving some money and putting a sticker on something, and that is not how it works at all. There's just this atmosphere, and everybody's so friendly and everybody's so nice, and it's just a really nice world, to be honest.
Hi, I'm Declan Burke, and welcome to The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindsets, motivations, and opinions of the elite talent, brands, agencies, and rights holders working with Sport Indoors. Today's guest, Si McNally, is Operations Director for OMG Racing, winners of the British Superbike Championship in 2022, and gunning to remain champions in 2023. Si is an amazingly interesting fellow to talk to. I talked to him before when he was with PMR Racing in the BTCC, and he's transferred from cars to bikes, and you're going to learn all about the OMG team, including what the OMG stands for, maybe not what you think, and get his views on where superbikes are going and why it's such an engaging product. Enjoy. Hey, Si, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Look, it's great to catch up again. Since we last talked, I understand that you've moved from the BTCC into the British Superbike Championship. So fill me in.
Yeah, so obviously I've been doing BTCC 5 or 6 years, and it's a fantastic championship. You know, within the British motorsport fan base, it's kind of, you know, it's the biggest four-wheeled one by quite a long way. I just fancied a bit of a change and a bit of a challenge, to be honest. It's the British Superbike Championship is something that I think everybody that's into cars has a secret love for bikes. Some people it's quite secret, some people are, you know, a bit more open with it, but it's something that, you know, it's fast, it's scary, it's dramatic. And I followed it for quite a long time, but I'd had a bit of a break because back in 2014, a really good friend of mine, one of my oldest friends, he used to ride British Superbikes, and unfortunately he passed away at the Northwest 200, one of the road races. And that kind of put it on the back burner a bit for me. Like, I didn't really pay too much attention to it. But I started dealing with Alan Gardner and Alan Lowe, who own OMG Racing. And that was as part of our BTCC campaign in 2021. Developed a really good friendship with those guys, and it just sort of organically went from there. They wanted to make some changes to their commercial lineup for 2023. And all the pieces fit together, and it's probably the best thing I've ever done. It's fantastic.
Okay, so now leading on to that then, have you been on a bike?
I have. Not something I would do anymore.
You kept your hair color. If it was me, I'm gray already, but I probably would have been gone white from the scare.
Yeah, there's some white in there somewhere, I think.
Okay, good stuff. So, for the listeners, why don't we figure out a little bit more about the British Superbike Championship then? So tell us about it.
It's dramatic, it's exciting. You know, the bikes are capable of more than 200 miles an hour. The riders they're all incredibly skilled. There's a huge amount of natural talent in it. It's the biggest, the most popular, I should say, domestic motorcycling championship in the world. Viewership last year in the UK was 9.4 million individuals, I think. And across the globe, I think it's 246 million individuals.
Wow. That's some pretty big numbers.
It's quite an interesting one, actually, because obviously UK, huge thing. It's bikes are quite a niche thing in that cars, you know, most people have a car that they'll drive to work in, whereas bikes, if you're into bikes, you're into bikes. And, you know, you've got to be a certain type of person to do that. It's the speed, it's the excitement, it's the camaraderie. So British Superbike Championship kind of brings everybody in the UK together for that. At that top level, which is really, really refreshing. But what's interesting is the series' second biggest market is actually Indonesia and Malaysia. So it's a truly global thing. You know, it's not just some guys in the UK that go racing at the weekend. You know, we're talking our budget to run two bikes for the year is significantly bigger than it was to run two cars in the British Touring Car Championship, which surprises a lot of people.
Okay, so let's skip out. We'll come back to the championship. You've now piqued my interest around the bikes, right? So, I mean, clearly engineering works of magnificence. So what kind of, like, I mean, in terms of tires and weather conditions, like what goes into a bike and kind of what's the team around it like?
So we're Yamaha. So we use Yamaha R1s. They come from Yamaha as a as a bike. And then there's, I don't think there's one component on the bike other than a couple of very small clips and stuff that's actually the same as it would come out of the factory, which again surprises a lot of people. A lot of the parts on it are Yamaha, but they're special Yamaha factory parts. We build our own engines. So PCR Performance is part of the OMG group owned by Paul Curran. It's one of the biggest bike tuners in the UK. We have engine dynos, bike dynos. So everything is done in-house up there. Engines produce around about, dependent on championship regulations, between 220 and 250 horsepower. And the bike weighs 168 kilos. So,
So you don't want to fall over on that one, yeah?
Yeah, no, they're not. We could make them lighter. There are ways that we could make it lighter, but the championship regulations, I believe it's either 167.5 or 168 kilos is that minimum weight. They're rocket ships. They are very, very impressive pieces of engineering.
I haven't done much on motorbikes. I was on at a English colleague, Mark Kelsey, basically, who's, I think, Singapore-based or Thailand-based now, back in my Tokyo days. And if we were going to meetings together, rather than taking subways halfway across Tokyo, I'd hop on the back of his bike and we'd be there in no time. It was infinitely faster than either subway or taxi, for example. Yeah.
Well, we do road racing as well. So we do the Northwest, we do the TT. To put it in perspective on these bikes and how mental the riders are, to put it bluntly, James Hillier, who's a TT winner, he podiumed at the TT for us last year. He at the Northwest got clocked at 207.7 miles an hour in the wet.
Wow.
On one of the Northern Irish roads. Obviously a closed road, but that kind of shows just
Yeah, that's where I'm thinking your brakes and your tires want to be pretty, pretty nailed on. Yeah.
Yeah, they're quite special things. The tires are controlled to the championship and to the series we're racing in. So the TT, we run on Metzler tires. We're sponsored by Metzler tires for that. We run on Pirellis for the British Superbike Championship. That's all, you know, but the Pirellis, we have different compounds that we can choose. So it's kind of rider preference as to what compound they choose to use, depending on the track surface, the conditions, and the way the bike's set up. So some of them may have a harder front tire and softer suspension to you know, when they lean in, they get a slightly different feel of compliance. It's all kind of personal preference around that. And again, it's things that it surprises people just how much, you know, they're not just a bike that we've nailed some fast bits on. They are proper engineering marvels.
That's fascinating. So then, like you mentioned, one of the riders there who's driving at a significantly fast speed on a Northern Irish road. But so there's two riders in the team, is there? Or
so there's two riders in British Superbikes. So Kyle Ride, who was with us last year, he finished sixth overall in the championship, and Ryan Vickers, who's our new rider, who's done British Superbikes for a few years, but has had some technical issues and some bad luck, to be honest. But he's done very well on Yamahas in the past in other championships, which usually translates really well into good results in British Superbikes. So we're quite hopeful of that. And we've got James Hillier, who's our road rider. So he is a former TT winner. Excuse me. He's a bit of a legend when it comes to road racing. But he's actually just come back from the Dakar. He completed the Dakar last week.
Wow.
First time he'd ever done it. And he did the solo one. So he was out all day on his own, got back to the bivouac, had to fix his bike, has to do all his own stuff, slept, got up, did the same thing. He actually separated or dislocated his collarbone on stage 4 or 5. So he rode the entire event after that strapped up, and he still finished really well.
Wow.
It just shows the mentality they've got is just...
Absolutely. And I mean, in terms of just thinking about the speed, particularly not so much Dakar perhaps, but on roads and on track, the kind of instincts and the response that these fellas have must be off the charts, is it? I mean, versus me, for example, you know.
Do you know what? They train a lot. Both physically and mentally, they do a lot of, you know, there's a lot of mental training that goes into it to keep your reactions up. So I did some things when I was at BTCC, when I was with Powermax, we did some things with the British Speedway team. and they've got a rig, which is a bike that has a light on it that flashes when the, you know, as if the light is going green on the thing, and you have to twist the throttle to go to test your reaction speed. And the reaction speed of a normal person compared to a proper motorbike racer is just light years apart. You know, you're talking, they're talking thousands of a second to react to things.
And that's mad. So yeah, do you think that's genetic? Do you think it's training? Do you think it's a mix?
I think anyone to race a motorcycle has got to have a lot of raw talent. There's a lot of, yeah, I think you've got to, it's a very different thing to car racing. You've got to have, you know, talent is important in car racing, but on bikes, you haven't got a cage around you. You haven't got things to protect you. You're not strapped in. You know, you are the crumple zone. If you, you know, if something goes wrong, it's going to hurt.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Not for me. Love watching it. But I think, something like hopping into the cold sea is more my style. Yeah. Gives me my adrenaline rush. As you know, I worked for two London-based firms for quite a while in financial services. And one of the things we used to do a lot of was corporate entertainment. Yeah. So, and, you know, track day, stuff like that, et cetera, going to sporting events. Sport is, I mean, lots of people love sport, right? And the thrill of trading the markets and the thrill of watching high-speed motorcycle racing, you know, you could say they're linked perhaps. So what does OMG have if I wanted to get involved in that regard?
Well, we've actually come up with a couple of interesting programs for this year that are kind of breaking the mold a little bit. So first one is a program, we've called it the 44 Club. It's 44 members. It's a sponsorship program that basically concentrates on people having a good time rather and enjoying themselves, having a really high level of hospitality rather than lots of branding all over everything. So it's 44 members. It's a fixed price. That gives you 2 days at each round. There's 11 rounds across the year. We've just invested in a brand new 20 meter by 20 meter F1 style hospitality unit. And they have their own sectioned off lounge in there with its own door. It's, you know, it's a nice private sort of quiet area that they can either chat and do business if they choose to, or just chat, you know, utilize it as a bit of an escape. And they get pillion rides with the superbike riders. They get safety car rides. They get grid walks. It's all the stuff that you'd have to, you know, you're talking the suite of things that you'd get as a tier one sponsor when you're putting in north of £1 million. But for a lot lower cost. And it's aimed at twofold. One, people who love motorbikes that may, you know, run a company, buy a couple of places, want to bring their mate every weekend and just enjoy it. But the main thing is the corporate kind of element, as you said, like the corporate hospitality element to it, of being able to have this program that you know that actually if you've got a client that you want to do something with and, you know, trying to get across the line or to say thank you or to incentivize staff, you've got this platform there that you can go, I've got 10 places at this. We can fill it every weekend. You know, they're going to have a really good time, be hosted properly. It's all silver service. It's all very high end and kind of looking after people properly and giving them an experience rather than just the normal. I don't like the term sponsorship because it implies just giving some money and putting a sticker on something. And that is not how it works at all. Yeah, it's a corporate entertainment package, I would say.
But I like the experience kind of angle because my firm belief is that people hang on to memories much more so they do anything physical that they might be given. Yeah, if they have a really good experience.
Definitely. And we're hiring a photographer each round to come into the 44 Lounge so that there'll be professional photos of them doing all the things that they want to do. And it gives them an opportunity. So every round we have a Q&A session in our normal hospitality. So people can ask the riders questions. They could talk about the weekend and things like that. But in 44 Club, the riders and some stars of the sport and think, you know, some really interesting people will be in the 44 Club during the day, just chatting and just getting to know people. And it's that access that is a bit different, I think. You know, it is sponsorship because at the end of the day, we need funding to go racing. This is a very expensive thing. It costs more than north of £2 million a year to win the championship, which we did. But it's just the way we deliver it. It's just delivering it in a way that nobody's done it before.
Okay, that's I look forward to being there, Si.
Yeah. Yes. But, I've already got a spot.
Yeah. Okay, that's very interesting about the 44 Club. You mentioned there was maybe one other thing as well in the hospitality front.
Yeah, so as I said, we've just invested a lot of money in this new hospitality unit, and on Fridays, all of the rounds, we're going to be hiring out as an event venue. So if there are, you know, if there's a company, perhaps a tech company or a bike company or a car company or anyone that is looking to host a meeting or a launch or even a fashion show, anything like that in a bit of a different environment, we can hold up to 300, 400 people in this unit. And it's air-conditioned, it's climate controlled, it's a really nice thing. And they're in the midst of a motorsport paddock. You know, it's not like you go into a hotel and you come out and it's dreary and rainy and you go to your car and you go home. You're in the midst of this paddock. You get to go to the garage, you meet the riders, you know, there's all sorts of things they can do. But the really interesting thing about it is that you actually, say if you had 150 people come, you get 158 tickets for the weekend. So everyone that comes can go and watch the racing for the weekend, because it's a really good way of us getting new people into the sport. And it's a really good way to incentivize people coming to your event.
Yeah, God, that's, again, I really like that. I mean, as I mentioned before, memories, experiences are interesting. But it's also, I mean, thinking of like some of the hospitality I've done before, you'd have maybe a couple of guys and they might bring their kids. Yeah. And so the kind of the sitting around and the lunch and the pints or the glasses of wine or whatever aren't really, you know, the kids understandably aren't particularly interested in that. Yeah. So what they've done sometimes is they've come, maybe had the main course and then popped off and watched whatever sport it is. So I think it also opens it up so that rather than again, a guy or a girl having to give up family time, that maybe they can bring some of their family along, which is great.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's one of those things where say if you know, the mother or the father came to the meeting on the Friday for whatever, then actually if they want to bring their family at the weekend, we can get massively discounted tickets if they need extra tickets. So it's, you know, we want, at the end of the day, we want more people to come and watch the championship, because it's good for the championship, it's good for us. And at the end of the day, if they're supporting us as a team, it's better for us anyway. So it's, you know, it's just that organic way of, you know, one, raising funding, because we do need funding to go racing. Two, giving people the experience. And three, bringing people into the championship. It's, you know, it's kind of a win-win for everybody.
Okay, Si, so let's circle back and then talk a little bit about the OMG team itself. So OMG, what does it stand for? Is it Oh My God?
It's not Oh My God, but most people assume it is. It's the initials of the three founders, basically. The surnames. Alan Gardner is the only one still involved in it. He's obviously the G. So yeah, it's nothing so exciting as Oh My God.
Okay. Well, you know, presumably the founders would argue with you about that.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Yeah.
And like the team comprises, okay, there's riders. What else? I mean, there you and there's presumably loads of other people. So how many people in total are kind of, how does that work? And is it seasonal in terms of seasonal is the wrong word, but kind of around championships, is there a kind of a more staff then than there would be on a normal day to day or not?
Yeah, there's, I think there's about 10 or 12 of us full time. So we've got, there's two sites. We've got the site in Stratford-upon-Avon, which is our office. We've got the site in Cannock, which is the race workshop next to PCR. We've got full-time mechanics up there looking after the bikes and looking after all the mechanical stuff. And there's four of us down here that look after the kind of day-to-day commercial and running and everything like that. Holly, who is the operations manager, she's based up in Cannock as well. So it's quite, there's kind of the two sites, but we work very closely together to manage it all. On a race weekend, I think it's 58 people we have. We're by far the biggest team in the paddock, and that's around, you know, having enough people. We run three bikes across a race weekend, because we've got the two super bikes and we have a super stock, which Stock 1000, which James rides, will be riding this year. Obviously all the mechanics, all the tire guys, all the truckies, all the parts guys to run all of that. But our hospitality setup, well, last year was big. This year is going to be even bigger. So we've got to employ more people for that as well. So we've got chefs, we've got, you know, the serving staff, everybody, you know, nobody is more important than anybody else. Everyone plays a really pivotal role in making it all work properly.
Okay. And so, I mean, you're relatively new in the team. So this might be a difficult question, but so far, who do you think the biggest joker is on the team?
Probably Alan, who owns it, actually. He's very down to earth. If you didn't know, you would not know that he was the owner of the team. And he's, I'm going to sound like I'm brown nosing now, but he is hilarious. There's a lot of practical jokes. There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of, you know, taking the mickey. And as it's a race team, you've got to be thick skinned. You've got to be able to roll with it, because we all work hard and everybody plays hard as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what one imagines a race team will be like. Yeah.
It's exactly how you'd imagine a race team to be. We have an end of year party. At the end of every year, we put up a separate hospitality unit and we host a big party. Last year we won the championship, so it was a big blowout. And I think we went through something like 100 bottles of vodka and 1500 bottles of beer in 3 hours.
That's a lot, specifically if there was only 12 of you there.
Yeah, no, I mean, there were lots of people there. There were a couple of hundred people there, but it's a lot. I don't drink, but they know how to have a good time.
Well, I'm just thinking, right, maybe we need to get you a vodka sponsor, yeah?
That'd be good. That would be very good.
And so we've touched as well on the... a little bit on the fan base. Obviously, you were mentioning Indonesia and Malaysia as being the countries where there's a lot of fans. So how do you reach out, or how do you communicate to the fan base of OMG Racing?
Social media is a really big part of what we do. We're really active on social media. So my predecessor, a guy called Dave Neal, runs a podcast. And he was very good at getting media out to the fans and kind of, you know, all that sort of stuff. Since I've come in, we're still doing that. We've changed it up a little bit in that we're going commercialized with sponsors this year rather than self-sponsoring, which we have for years. So we're having to change the way our social media works a little bit to make sure that we're going to be engaging those sponsors properly. So we're already building up that. But we try and engage people. We want to work without the fans. Us and the championship are nothing. It's all about, you know, giving them the opportunity to come and see us, to come and see us in the garage at the rounds. And just, there's going to be a lot coming over the next few months that is going to answer a lot of questions that people have around British Superbikes, I think, because it's both an open world and a secretive world, because you can't share certain things, but we want to open that world up a little bit to people and give people the access that they haven't had before, you know, with videos and social media posts and all that sort of stuff. And it's quite exciting, actually. There's a lot of cool plans, you know, in the pipeline.
You've just gone exactly where my head went, right? So if you're a social media and the fans and all of that, et cetera, content obviously is king, right? It's really, really important. And I mean, I imagine the kind of content you can produce just around, you know, the bikes, the riders, you've mentioned the team kind of culture is one of having a bit of fun, you know, work hard, play hard, etc. I mean, there must be reams of content, right? And then once you interact with sponsors as well, that becomes more interesting as well. So are you building up a content team, or do you have one, or is that falling on your shoulders, or how does that work?
We've got, Tommy Hill is, he's a former British Superbike champion. He's run teams in the championship. He does all of our sort of graphics work and design and behind the scenes stuff. And he's fantastic. He is, you know, he knows this sport like the back of his hand. I mean, he's got loads of suggestions because I am new to the sport. I'm bringing the car world into it, I guess, a little bit. So some ideas from that are a bit different. It's just a different culture, but he's been so helpful in helping me and making all these suggestions going, oh, we should do this, we should do that. I've made this, I've made that. And it's just great because I could pick up the phone now and say to him, like, mate, I've got this idea, we need to do this. And actually, rather than having to employ a massive content team, you know, we've got lots of, well, I'm not saying lots of, we've got contractors that we can pull in to do video work and things like that we know are on brand, but the majority of it we can actually do ourselves. And we did some interesting video work. We were out in Cartagena sort of testing back in December. And kind of having a fun week as well. So Alan takes the team out there with loads of motorbikes as like a thank you for the year. He does it every year. And I was on the apex of corners, getting right down, getting close to the riders. And that's content that people don't see because you can't, over here, health and safety, you can't do that. But in Spain, they're not quite so bothered. So we've got lots of cool content and lots of ideas for cool content through the year as well that hopefully will engage a lot of people.
Okay, that's really, obviously that's great from a fan perspective, but it's also great from a sponsor perspective because, you know, it means more eyeballs, right? And more engagement. And engagement being, as we all know, certainly in a social context, the most important thing, really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of my bread and butter is building engagement programs for sponsors. That's what I've done for years. And that's what I really enjoy and getting stuck into that. And, you know, if we've got a potential sponsor that comes to us, the first thing I do, I get a bit overexcited and the guys in the office have to calm me down a bit because I'm like, oh, we could do this, we could do that. And the good thing about working with Tommy and Alan, and they get it. They, you know, if I'm like, we could do this idea, it's going to cost this much, but we could do this and it could be amazing. If I can make a case that it'll work, then we'll do it. And it's just fantastic. I mean, our social media last year, obviously this was Dave that did it, not me. Because I took him between January and November, our total engagement was something like 10 million across all the social platforms.
Wow.
The numbers are really strong.
Yeah. So bespoke content for a sponsor, possible?
Oh yeah, 100%. That's what it's all about for me. It's not one of those things where we go, well, we'll give you 2 social media posts a month. We'll do this, we'll do that. It's about ideas and creating the right content and something that's relevant to their business that engages motorcycle fans. Because if you've got a business that's non-endemic to motorcycles, that if we can get the motorcycle fans who are, by their very nature, very loyal and very, you know, because it's seen as a bit of a niche thing, a niche makes it sound small, but it's not. It's a passion thing. If you bring a non-endemic brand in, if you're investing in the sport, that's automatically seen as a positive because it's investing in their sport. You know, it's their world. They love it. So a brand that's investing in that is from outside the world of motorcycling, it's a really good thing. And it's a really easy way to engage people.
I hadn't thought of it like that, but that makes perfect sense because it is a sport which a lot of sport is like that, I guess. Sorry, where people are really passionate about it. But I guess the kind of, you know, if I'm supporting my local football club or our soccer club or rugby club or anything like that, etc., maybe my spend is on a jersey. But if I'm mad into bikes, I probably have a bike myself.
Exactly. Yeah.
So my financial commitment to the sport directly or indirectly is probably slightly larger. Well, slightly.
Yeah, I mean, say if you had, I don't know, a phone manufacturer. If one of the phone manufacturers came into British Superbikes and was obviously investing good money in it and making a real effort to engage with the fans, that would really, it's one of those worlds where it's all passion driven. It's not driven by that. It's driven by that.
Yeah.
And that would, it's one of those things where I just think it just drives people. They want to support people that are supporting their world.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'm just thinking phones. Then I'm thinking, you know, how competitions among users could be interesting and the kind of the rewards. Anyway, we'll maybe take that one offline. Not everything for the podcast listeners, you know.
The championship as well, it's coming from a car world, British Touring Car Championship, fantastic. But going to bikes, a chap called Stuart Higgs and MSV, Motorsport Vision, who run the championship, they get it. And they know that the fans are the most important thing. And it's really, I don't want to use the word refreshing, but the championship's just done right. Like if you come to a round, everything's polished, everything's done right. It looks as you'd imagine a world-class championship to look. It's how you'd imagine it being. And it's the atmosphere is really good. It's one of those things, if somebody is kind of toying with the idea of going to a round, just go to one and experience it because, you know, I've been to football matches, done all this sort of stuff, but there's just this atmosphere and everybody's so friendly and everybody's so nice. And it's just a really nice world, to be honest.
So on that, go to it and experience it. So linked in my head anyway. So I have a 14-year-old son who basically is half French, God love him. And he mentioned the Tour de France in cycling recently. And he's like, I don't quite get it, Dad, because you go and you wait hours for them to come and then they go by cycling. And let's say they're cycling by and I don't know, they're going 30, 35 kilometers an hour, something like that. And they go by. And so the top of the peloton goes by and then the rest. So maybe you've got something like 15, 20 minutes and then you're 7 hours of waiting on the side of the road is done with. Now, obviously, if it's a track, the riders come round again. But if they're traveling at kind of 200 miles an hour, how much of them do you actually see?
A surprising amount, actually. I mean, do you mean as in like looking at detail of them, or like because the racing's really close. It's one of those things where you'd expect that because they're on a motorbike and traveling at, you know, they do it a corner at 150 miles an hour, you think they're all going to be staying apart and everything, and they're not, they're touching each other. They're, you know, it's that's what makes it so exciting. Unfortunately, we lost a rider, Chrissy Rouse, unfortunately passed away at Donington last year. So it's not, you know, it is dangerous, but it's exciting to watch it because it is one of the races that we won last year. I think we won by 0.03 of a second. That's how tight it is. There was one of the championships. It wasn't the superbikes that we race in. It was one of the slightly lesser championships, but under the British Superbikes umbrella. The first P1 and P2, I guess they both won, were 0.00 of a second. There was nothing in it. And it's...
That's heartbreaking for the guy who came second. Yeah.
Well, I think they had joint first. I think they okay. had, I can't remember.
Okay,
well,
that's probably exactly,
but it was amazing. Like, it was really good PR for them as well. But like that's what it's like. It is close. It's not like, you know, it's not like a time trial where you watch a bike and then 30 seconds later another bike and then another bike. These guys are, you know, they are fighting, they are battling, they're cutting under each other. It's really good to watch. If anyone wants an idea of just how exciting it gets, Thruxton 2022, one of the races from there that we were involved in, we were kind of in the top three, it went viral at the time because it's just unbelievable. You're literally on the edge of your seat grabbing on like that because they're cutting under each other, and it's really exciting.
Now, if I was to put Thruxton 2022 into YouTube, would something come up?
Yeah, Thruxton 2022 British Superbikes. It'll bring up the laps that it went viral.
Okay, well, I know what I'm doing at some point over the weekend then. I often think in sport in general, particularly when things are tight, like you look at sprinters, you look at swimmers, you look at anything where, you know, it comes down to hundreds of a second. You're talking thousands of a second. Like the mental fortitude of all competitors in such sports must be bananas strong, because, you know, to be less than a second from podium, for example.
Oh, well, a second in motorsport. I mean, in the race, you know, a second could be 20 bike lengths, potentially. When you're talking about the speeds involved and the sort of finite little differences, it sounds like nothing, but on the track, it's actually quite a big, you know, it's quite a big gap. We did a bit of a study on lap times and everything, actually, before we did Autosport last weekend. And we worked out that Brands Hatch GP, if we put a superbike out and it started the same time as British Touring Car, we would, on the last lap of the British Touring Car race, which is sort of like 15 laps, we'd lap the car. And it's, the difference is, and again, that doesn't sound a huge amount, but if you know about motorsport, you know that lapping just doesn't, you know, it doesn't happen in these kind of sprint races. It just, unless you make a mistake, the times and the speeds these guys are doing are just nuts.
Okay, so 2023, right? What are the aims, the aspirations for 2023? Yeah.
We want to win the championship again.
Okay.
I mean, that's every team says that. Every team says they want to win the championship. We were formed in 2018. We'd done nothing. There had never been any racing whatsoever in any sport. 2018, Alan and the guys that started it decided they wanted to go racing. 2022, we won the championship. Brad Ray won the Riders' Championship. We won the team's championship. So, fastest team ever to win it. We're the only non-factory team since factory teams began about 2 or 3 years after the inception of the championship in the 80s to win it. So there's a lot of pride, and we know we're capable of doing it again, and we're going to do it again. That's the
What a story. So basically, it's almost like you could say new kid on the block, challenger brand has, you know, swept the decks basically within 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was our fifth season. We had 10 wins, 13 pole positions, 14 fastest laps, or the other way around. I can't remember which way around it is. And 18 podiums over that. So it was, yeah, really, really successful. Okay, really so successful.
Well, you know, I know it's not oh my God, but oh my God. Yeah. That's some performance.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of that. I think the guys are pretty proud of that.
I've really enjoyed talking with you again, Si. I'm delighted you're with OMG Racing. The speeds just get faster and faster in your life. And for any listeners out there, OMG clearly are open for business. Si is not a believer in traditional sponsorship. He's much more of a believer in partnerships and in delivering value and making sure everyone has a wonderful experience. So don't hesitate to reach out either to Si or to Sport Endorse. Si, thanks a million for your time. I'm looking forward to coming over and being trackside and at the end of it all, raising a glass to the winner.
I'm looking forward to you getting us a vodka sponsor.
That's all for this episode. Thanks once again to Si for giving us his time and sharing his views, and to everyone continuing to download and listen to The Sit Down. We truly appreciate your support. If you're interested in working with OMG Racing and adding some serious horsepower to your corporate entertainment while partnering with a championship winning team that has a large fan base, reach out to us at hello@sportendorse.com or DM us via social media. Be sure to follow Sport Endorse on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn for all the latest updates. Until next time, take care and be relentless.